coming in gold and a world record. Ian Thorpe, the birth of a legend.
458 is the total, out of which Bradman has made 309 not out. It's a world's record.
Freeman has 2-1. The crowd roaring. Freeman wins gold. Cathy's the winner. Australia the winner.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
Australia is back on the biggest stage.
Welcome to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Sam Edmund.
Everybody, and welcome to the show. As always, we're here for our friends at Tobin Brothers Funeral Celebrating Lives. It's Julian DeStoop sitting in for Sam Edmund. Today, we are joined by a man that epitomised the word consistency. Gary O'Donnell missed just 14 games in his 12 years of senior footy at Essendon. 6 years in a row, he finished top three in the best and fairest. At a time, the club had champions such as Watson, Madden, Danaher, Thompson, Wanganeen, Harvey and Hearn, to name a few. In 1993, he won the Crichton Medal in a year the Baby Bombers won an unlikely premiership. O'Donnell also captained the club and represented Victoria 9 times. Later, he was one of Lee Matthews' trusty lieutenants as Lethal's Lions went back-to-back-to-back in the early 2000s. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Julian. Pleasure to be here.
Born and bred in Melbourne, you had two stints in Brisbane up at the Lions, but now Perth is home. Just let us know what you're up to these days.
I work with the Simon Black Academy. So Blackie's got academies in 4 states, Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne, and over here in Perth, and just a little footy academy where we're trying to get the best out of 18 to 23-year-olds, just school leavers, I reckon. They do a Diploma of Sports Development through Torrens University online, and half our day is with the physical side of things, and half a day is their study in an 8-unit diploma over a year. So that's what I'm doing over here in Perth.
Let's go back to where it all began. You were born on May 12, 1965, and it's fair to say it's an understatement that you were born into a footballing family. Just take us through the bloodlines.
Yeah, there's about 7 that have played league football, and I was 4th generation in our family to do it. My great-grandfather, Ted Rankin, Edwin, played in the first AFL game between Essendon and Geelong, for Geelong. That was back in 1897, and then his 3 sons played. Another brother of his actually played a couple of games, and then my father played for Geelong and North, 8 games for Geelong, 15 for North, and then I came along. So one of Ted's sons, Cliff, coached Geelong to their first premiership in 1925, and all those guys played for Geelong, and I just happened to play for Essendon. And it was there was a lot of synergy in it. That in 1996, they had the 100th celebration of the VFL-AFL, and I played on the day. I think it's May 7th, 1996, or May 7, 1897, 100 seasons earlier. My great-grandfather played for Geelong. I just happened to be captaining Essendon 100 years later. So family, pretty proud moment, I would have thought.
Absolutely. The night that Darren Bewick kicked a lazy 9 goals as he returned from a knee reconstruction. So you mentioned your dad, Graham, there. He played 7 games for Geelong, 16 games for North Melbourne. Given all that lineage you had in Geelong, who did you support growing up as a child?
Well, like all kids, I barrack for the winners, the winning team, or the most successful team at that point. I had a little sniff at Hawthorn in 1971 when they won the flag, but quickly turned to Carlton in 1972. I had the plastic number 25 on the back of my Guernsey. Alex Jesolinko loved him, and barracked for Carlton, much to the chagrin of all my relatives that lived in Geelong. I think I was the first black sheep, I would have thought. Everyone barracked for Geelong if you were a Rankin or an O'Donnell. So, yeah, not too popular, but that soon gets drummed out of you when you turn up at Essendon, especially when you've got a guy like Kev Sheedy coaching us. And now I do not have an ounce of feeling for Carlton at all. I despise them.
Most Essendon supporters will be very, very happy that you said that, Gary. Now, it'd be a mistake to say that it was just a footballing family. 2 sisters, Wendy and Shelley, fantastic netballers, elite netballers. The latter, Shelley, 84 games for the Diamonds, including including three World Championships and a Commonwealth Games gold medalist. You were both embarking on professional careers at the same time. Did it help each other being both professional athletes at the time? And what was it like growing up in the backyard with such sporty siblings?
A lot of people would have said that Shelley probably could have played half back for Essendon, much to her style of play. She loved the rough stuff. The rougher it got in netball, the more she liked it. But yeah, our careers were sort of at the same time, so much so that my mother missed the 93 Premiership. She was in Darwin at a national competition for Shelley and Wendy up there, and I think they just watched the game live from the MCG up in Darwin somewhere, probably in a pub or at the hotel, and they were quite happy with what happened. I think actually Victoria might have won the tournament in 93 as well up in Darwin as well. So mum missed it, but yeah, Shelley really probably missed her time. If she had been coming through about 5 years ago now, she probably would have played footy and probably in the Aaron Phillips mould, I would have thought, quite strongly built, good ball handler, a good disposer of the ball, and loved the rough stuff. So, it was an interesting household. Even my two younger brothers, who are about 7 years younger, they played a little bit of district cricket, and one of them, Kevin, played in three premierships at Springvale in the 90s. At about the same time, I was going all right at the Bombers in premiership teams as well.
So was it always going to be footy for you growing up, or did you dabble in some other sports as well?
Pretty boring. It was footy in the winter and cricket in the summer. As a junior, I liked to run as well, so I'm not too bad at the 800s and the 1500s. But generally it was footy or cricket. And that's the beauty of the modern day. Kids get so many opportunities if they want to be able to play all sports, and all sports sort of rub off on the other sports, I would have thought. And if a kid gets pretty good at one sport, if he played a whole gamut of sports, they add to his game in the one that he becomes good at.
So with your junior football career, it was North Ringwood. It was Quambie Reserve, if I remember rightly, back in those days where they played their footy. What are your early memories of playing junior footy and club footy?
Well, I wasn't allowed to play until I was 10. There was no Auskick in those days, and the youngest age group was under 13s, and my father said, "Nah, you're not playing until you're 10, and I harped probably for the last 3 years before he let me play to be able to play. I was only small as well, so it was probably a good decision. But North Ring as a 10-year-old, end up playing every second week. Probably the big white shorts when we played away were a bit baggy, and but I thought I was the ant's pants being able to play footy, and played, 3 years in the under-13s. First couple of years, I had to wear a long sleeve. That's one memory, and I thought I was a real footballer when I was able to go from long sleeves to short sleeves, and Dad allowed it to happen. They didn't have the short sleeve jumpers small enough, perhaps, but once I grew into it, and I turned into a real footballer wearing a short sleeve, and wore the high-cut boots as well, the old Jenkins boots with that protected the ankles. And there was one particular game back in the day, the grounds were terrible if we had a wet winter and you're 3 or 4 inches in mud, and at the end of the game I've taken the boots off and thrown them Dad's feet in tears. I'm never wearing them again. Give me some low cut boots, because all the other kids had low cuts, but not you're wearing the high cut boots to protect your ankles. Probably embarrassing for myself to be doing that to my father, but I never wore a high cut pair of boots again, and never wore a long sleeve jumper again.
Always a short sleeve man. Now, as you mentioned, growing up in the Ringwood area, it was the days of zoning, and Ringwood was an unbelievable breeding ground for the Bombers in the late 70s and early 1980s. Take us through some of the players that came out of the Ringwood area that ended up at the Bombers, and how did it be that you ended up at Essendon?
Well, played in my actual team going through the juniors. You had a guy called Peter Banfield who played at Essendon and went to Brisbane. Paul Salmon, I also went to school with. We were in the same team at North Ringwood as well. But then you had guys a couple of years younger than us, Dean Bailey. Kevin Walsh came through, but he was a little bit older. Daisy Williams was local at Vermont. Paul Vanderhaar at Ringwood. Neil Clark, Ringwood. A little bit before us, Robin Close, if the Essendon people remember him. There's a few more. I'll remember them as we go.
I think Ronnie Andrews was Heathmont, wasn't he?
No, he may well have played there at one point, but no, he was up bush,
country
I think,
boy.
Ronnie, but yep. He was was a country boy. But yeah, Terry Carl, another one who I think Gary Sidebottom or Carl Dritchich knocked him out. Or they both knocked him and Merv Nagel out in a game when they were young fellas. So not sure Terry Carl was the same, but he was a good young player that came through from North Ringwood as well. But yeah, we were quite a successful team, having quite a few guys that went on to play VFL, AFL football. But there was a guy called Gary Lewis. He was the local scout that would go to the eastern suburbs games, and you know, he would identify guys and give you an Essendon towel and an Essendon drink bottle, something like that, after a game, and just keep you probably entertained of the fact that if you're good enough, you're going to be playing at Essendon. And as a 16-year-old, the club ran skills clinics out at the Croydon Leisure Centre on a Friday night during the winter, and they were run by Russell Blue, Jeff Gosper, Graham Johnson, three premiership players from the 60s for Essendon. And that was quite a good development area for myself, being able to handle a ball, indoor courts, brand new footies, brand new Sherrins. It was great. You know, different to the big balloons we'd kick on a weekend for our local clubs. And all the Melbourne clubs really invested in their youth, in their area, in their zones, to make sure that they could, firstly sow the seeds and then reap the rewards of putting time into their juniors. So that was the memories from that time. But who knows? May not have come through and never played AFL. Who knows if that hadn't have been the case in an AFL draft situation these days, if it's compared.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. After the break, Gary O'Donnell begins the gradual climb to the top in the red and black.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, it's great to have your company on This Is Your Sporting Life, made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Today, we're with Essendon great Gary O'Donnell. And Gary, you joined the Bombers at a really strong time. You started in the under-19s and then basically 3 years in the reserves. Were there times there where you thought you wouldn't make it or you might have to try your luck elsewhere?
I didn't have a lot of courage and didn't have a lot of risk-taking in me. So didn't pursue any other or didn't get any offers from any other clubs anyway. So obviously, as you said, Bombers are winning premierships 84, 85. I'm coming through as a 19-year-old. I've actually missed 18 months of footy with a broken leg as a 17-year-old playing in my third senior game at North Ringwood. So didn't play for a year and a half, went straight over to the under-19s. No offers. The only offer I got to go anywhere else was from a guy called Steve Parson, and he was in the infamous Windy Hill Brawl of 74 as a young fella, actually playing for Richmond though, and he was coaching Brunswick. And he'd had a little bit of an association with North Ringwood, but he was coaching Brunswick in the VFA. And he said, if ever you need a game, I'll accommodate you. Come out and play VFA with me. So never got delisted. So it's taken me 4 years to get a game, but never sort of got delisted. They must have just seen something in me that, eventually something might come through. I think if you work hard, do the right things, be a good citizen, while the club's going okay, they'll keep those type of blokes on when you've got a pretty decent set of senior players that are holding spots down. When they eventually move on, they've got a few troops to come through from the reserves. And that was the sort of time it was. Hawthorn were pretty strong in those days as well. And some of their champion player or end up champion players, played 40, 50, 60 games in the reserves like a lot of others. So yeah, my almost 70 games in the reserves before I got a game, probably then, I had the tools perhaps that I'd get a career and not just a game. So that ended up happening.
They had to wait till round 22 1987, it's Essendon Collingwood at the MCG. You start on the bench, you come on after half time, and you've got a pretty decent opponent. What are your memories of your first game?
Memories of my first game, I just ran up and down the boundary line in front of the MCC members where the two coaches' boxes sat side by side in the members. And remember me, Sheeds? Just running past the box, making sure that he knew that I was able to be used if he wanted to. And that's the thing. You had only two on the bench. There wasn't a rotation policy like there is now. You know, a guy or the four start on the bench nowadays, they know they're coming on in about 4 minutes to get the rotations going. I suppose the advantage of that too is you don't get dragged playing poorly. You come back on and have another crack. In the old days, if you get dragged, you're probably not getting a kick and you can sit there and rot for a quarter. But yeah, it was half time and Paul Vanderhaar was struggling with a leg injury and she says, yep, you're going on to Peter Daicos. So played on him. I think, you know, he'd had about 20 and kicked three goals in the first half as well. So pretty daunting task to come on to him. And I did the job. I think he only had four or five touches after half time, but he kicked a goal about halfway through the last quarter. And Collingwood ended up winning by about 5 points. I always blame myself that it was my fault that we'd lost because I'd let him kick the goal. It was a great game. Both sides couldn't make the finals. I think it was the final five then, but there was only about 30,000. At the ground, but the old Southern Stand roof, you know, the echo through there made it sound like there's 100,000, and it was about 23 goals to 22 that won the game. Bomber Thompson played really well, 4 goals, and Darren Mullane killed us, I think, that day. So they're my memories, and it was, if I never got another game, I would have been satisfied. It was just fantastic to be able to run on the ground in a senior game, get a few kicks. But playing, having said that, the 4 years that I'd taken to get there, once I got that game, I thought, geez, yeah, I reckon I'll be all right now. I reckon I'm good enough to keep going here, and I've got a chance to get a career. And it was the last game of 87, and pre-season couldn't come quick enough for 88.
Well, you must have impressed, and you must have impressed in that role, because really, wasn't it, your lot in footy life for the next 3 or 4 years was that sort of lockdown defender role.
Yeah, and to tag bloke on the ball as well. I'd done a little bit of it in the seconds, and that, back in those days, a lot, you had good strong lists of probably a lot more older blokes. And you had a lot more blokes, they come back from injury to come through their seconds, or they're out of form and they're playing in the seconds, and you get to play on them as a kid against established, you know, VFL players. So yeah, look, you do your time and you just play your role. You hear a lot of it these days, the guys that are interviewed, yeah, each bloke played our role and we kept stuck to the structures and all that. Well, yeah, if you're willing to play a role and you do it well, devote yourself to the team, put the team, I think, yeah, A lot of people say, oh, you've got to put the team ahead of yourself. Well, I'm sure anyone does that, but the team certainly has to be the equal of you. You never put yourself in front of it. And just to be able to be given those roles to establish myself for a year or two, and then probably end up playing about half a career in the back line, half a career on the ball, was very satisfying.
You mentioned Kevin Sheedy before. He was a plumber by trade. He loved his rogues. He loved his blue collar workers. But you worked at the bank. How did that relationship work?
Yeah, he a lot of times it was bank man. How are you, bank man? And you'll it works okay as long as you work hard when it's time to work hard in training and in a game. But certainly, yeah, he had didn't have a thing against. He gave everyone an opportunity and everyone a chance. He probably he makes a lot of, you know, distinguishes between people a lot. And Damien Hard later on, he came through a few years, three years after me, and he worked in the bank as well in a branch in town. In the CBD, and he got called bank man by Sheeds, and he was far from a bank man on the field. He crossed that white line, and he was almost the hit man, not the bank man. So each to their own, and we all have different personalities both on and off the field, but it fitted in. Working the bank, the Commonwealth Bank, were really good for me. I was with them for 13 years. Back in those days, it was your main source of income, and footy, you know, probably supplemented that income. And it was only in the last 3 years of a career that I became like a full-time footballer. Other than that, before that, it would have been a full-time bank and then racing off at, you know, 4:30 to get out to the club to be able to train at 5, and then, you know, 3 hours training, and then by the time you're getting home in Ringwood on the other side of town at, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and then you're up at 6 o'clock the next morning to get into town to work, and it was just that cycle. But that's all we knew, and everyone was doing it, so everyone was equal. But yeah, bank man. Interesting situation when the back pocket plumber, hit man, is trying to guide you through a game of football. footy.
So the team, the Bombers, 1989, lose the prelim. 1990, we all know what happened there, losing the grand final to Collingwood. 6th in 91, 8th in 1992. And then we come to 1993 when, to be honest, not many people were tipping the Bombers to make the finals, let alone be a premiership contender. Why did things click so well and so quickly with that group in 1993?
Just it's luck sometimes that the right decisions are made, the right chemistry, just the right atmosphere at a club for, you know, half a dozen blokes that have been, you know, through almost a whole career and had a bit of success as well. You know, we had Paul Salmon and Bomber Thompson, Mark Harvey that had played in the 84-85 team. Well, not Fish, he missed 84. But and then you had, you know, about 10 blokes that had played in the 1990 grand final and got embarrassed by Collingwood. And then you had 7 or 8 young blokes either in their first or second year that just little did we know that, you know, 3 or 4 of them are probably going to be AFL Hall of Famers. And to have that happen at the one time, to have Sheeds being, you know, the most positive coach we've ever seen, perhaps. And we started the season off slow. I think we were 1.5 wins after 4 games or 5 games, but then got on a roll. A lot of games during that year, we came from behind. And the young kids, you know, Bird, Fletcher, McCurry, Macedi, Wanganeen, Ola Runshaw, Kelthorpe, the 17-year-old Dustin Fletcher, still going to school at year 12, back on the Monday each week. It was a perfect chemistry. We had a really basic set of team rules, you know, 10 or 12 of them that you weren't able to break. That's what we lived by. And we had speed. Both some of our older players had a little bit of toe, but all these kids were quick on their feet and quick in the mind. You throw in Michael Long, who had one of the better 93 final series. And, but little did we know at the start of the year that was going to happen. And I'd be a cranky old man if it hadn't, considering 1990 and the embarrassment we faced.
And we know it didn't look like it was going to happen at halftime in the prelim. 7 goals down against the Crows. You kicked the goal to put the Bombers in front. Earlier that final series, you'd lost to the Blues by a couple of points in the qualifying final. But just listening to a few of the senior players speak about the grand final since, it seemed like there was a supreme confidence in the group that come the grand final, it was going to be a different story against the Blues.
Yeah, that first, so we finished top by percentage. The first, I think it was the final six, and those six teams finished a game and a half apart. It was an amazingly even competition, and we were just lucky enough to finish ahead of Carlton on percentage. Played in the first ever night final, so it's only 27 years since finals have been played at night. Now they're talking about having the grand final at night. I'd keep it during the day, but there was a couple of blokes out in that first game against the Blues, but we still had to earn the right to get back to play them. I think they beat Adelaide the following week to go into the grand final directly, and we had to take the long route. And West Coast, I think the week after, won by 5 or 6 goals, played pretty well. And half time of the preliminary final against Adelaide, it wasn't just a seven goal difference, it was a smashing, like it was double scoring shots. It was 12 goals 12 to 6 goals 6. So we were well out of the game at that point. But half time, we're walking in, and Mark Harvey, who was out, and I think had we won, we knew he was coming back, but he'd come in ranting and raving and throwing his arms everywhere. We had a really good skipper in Mark Thompson, Bomber Thompson, who was pretty calm and collected and just, you know, trying to set us back on to, you know, back to the mindset of what we needed to do to try and start to turn things around. And, you know, Sheeds being Sheeds, you know, we weren't going to win in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the third quarter, but we could go take a step to be actually getting closer to winning again and, you know, getting a goal every so often to actually just, you know, peg it back so that we're in a reasonable margin at three-quarter time. And we didn't miss. That third quarter, every opportunity we had to kick for goal, we didn't miss. You know, Darren Puick, he's kicked his 6 goals straight. If you're going to have someone kick to your life, give it straight to him, I reckon, from all angles. He'd kick one from the pie stand if you wanted. And he was a wonderful player that just got us going. And then the kids that all year, quite a few games we were behind in games and came over the top of sides in, you know, second halves and last quarters. That was in everyone's mind that if, you know, we just stuck to the task, got on a roll again, we were a big chance, and that's what ended up happening again.
And grand final day, you were superb individually. I think most acknowledge you were clearly just behind Michael Long in terms of Norm Smith medal voting. Just take us through that image on the final siren. Peter Somerville knocks it down to you. The siren goes as you kick the ball away and you just slump in the middle of the MCG looking quite emotional. What are your memories of of how you were feeling at that time?
It was the single best feeling that I've experienced in my life. Absolutely. Like, all the hard work. Like, I was 28 years old, so it had been, I'd been at the club for 10 years. Had highs and lows. Yeah, mentioned earlier that I'd missed a year and a half of footy as a 17, 18-year-old with a broken leg. Taking the 4 years to make it. It was just the culmination of everything just coming together. And yeah, it was just the best. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the feeling, and I'll never forget that day. The best thing about the day, too, we had the game won with 10 or 15 minutes to go. We went about 10 goals up. Carlton pegged us back, kicked two or three cheapies late. But to be able to just play on ball that day, but then just play behind the ball and watch the game like a spectator, it was fantastic. Just watch the reactions and the beginning of blokes feeling, yeah, geez, we've won this. We've got a premiership. The crowd, the 95,000-odd that were there, to watch them, the Essendon people in the crowd, just, with the anticipation that what was going to happen in 10 or 15 minutes' time was, fantastic. That was something I'll savour as well, to be able to witness yourself almost. It was the probably second only to being able to, if you can, in the future, they can actually sit you in the grandstand and you can watch your game replayed as if you're there rather than just watch it on telly. But it was a fantastic day, and just the culmination of everything coming together.
This is Your Sporting Life, brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Coming up, Gary is named Essendon captain, but a second premiership medal proves elusive.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, we hope you're enjoying this week's edition of This Is Your Sporting Life. We're chatting with former Essendon captain and 1993 Premiership star Gary O'Donnell. Gary, six consecutive top three finishes in the best and fairest, as we mentioned earlier. Terry Danaher, a noted hard trainer, said you were one of the best trainers he'd ever seen. What was the secret behind not only your consistency as a player, but also your durability as well?
I think you've just knocked the nail on the head there. And what Terry said, if you have a consistent level at training and you train at a standard, you're going to have to produce on the field on the weekend as consistently as you can, you're going to get consistent performance. So, my highs weren't as high as some of the better players that have gone around that have played this game, our great game, but certainly I don't think my lows were either, and it was a fairly leveled output from week to week, and it's to do with being able to just approach every training session as if it's going to be your best one, and going flat out, and then making sure you look after your body both off the field and also in the gym in your conditioning as well. And I had a really good couple of fitness coaches, a guy called Loris Bertolacci, who was there during our premiership years and in our formative years as well. He made me really strong from thigh to torso, and I reckon that's the key. If you've got a strong core, strong upper legs and glutes, it gets you through the really rigorous 100 minutes of the game each week. And that's the key. You mentioned, I think earlier, I'd only missed about 15 games in a 15-year career, including reserves, and I think about half of them were through having the flu as well. So you need a bit of luck. Some people will say that he didn't put his head over enough, so he didn't get hurt. But you just have to make every post a winner in your preparation, and fingers crossed you don't get too bad impact injuries.
Go back to the end of 1993. That group looked like it had the footy world at its feet, but the team didn't make another grand final and win another premiership until 2000. Unfortunately for you, that was a couple of years after your time had finished. Should have that group won another flag in that era, post 93 up until 2000?
I think so, yeah. 94 was terrible. We didn't make the finals. We maybe took the foot off the accelerator. Maybe that was, would have been the fault of the young kids. It would have been a fault of the older blokes. Me being one of them, not being able to keep everyone on the straight and narrow as well. So had a little bit of bad luck as well. 95, we won the first final, but didn't go too well the second week. Richmond knocked us off. We got a few injuries that day. Matty Knights had a day out. The 96 prelim, we went to Sydney. Sydney. Probably didn't deserve to be premiers that year, but we had the team to do it. We only finished sixth, I think, but out of a final eight, but got within 1 point, and that was the Tony Lockett after the siren game. But we had six or seven injuries at that point. Now, four or five of them happened in that game. I'm not sure what sort of side we would have put out next week against North Melbourne, but probably should have won one more in that time. Probably Essendon, as soon as they got rid of their deadwood at the end of 98. They 90, that was me being one of them. Gary, you're too old, you're too slow, move on. They just had a little bit of a springboard again. They lost the prelim in 99 against Carlton. That might have been a year that they could have won, but yeah, certainly they made amends in 2000 to only lose one game and be the record that probably will stand for time, I would have thought, for a team only to lose one game in a year and take out a flag. But yeah, Sheed's coached four in 27 years. Probably could have had, with a bit of luck, another couple, but you take what you get because it's a really tough and hard game to win and to get to the top, and he was able to do it four times. What a brilliant man.
You touched on that final in 1995, and yes, Matthew Knight's had a big game, but arguably the turning point of that game is when you were picked off by Scott Turner, which back then was legal. He didn't get suspended for it. He'd be in all sorts of trouble these days. Have you got a memory of that incident? Because it was a celebrated one at the time.
Not sure it was legal. It just didn't get seen, and there was no trial by video.
There's Gary O'Donnell, and he was crunched unceremoniously by Scotty Turner, but he's got a big heart. Have a look again. Gee whiz, it was a solid bump, wasn't it? As O'Donnell spun to follow the ball, Turner wiped him out.
Yeah, he's picked me off. I think, not sure it was Paul Broderick, maybe. I can't remember the Richmond player. Kicked it over my head. I turned to go to run downfield, and Scott's coming the other way. And yes, woke up on the boundary line, and that was it. I probably wouldn't have played for 2 or 3 weeks either. My diaphragm, just that my whole body was a mess, bruised and battered. But that's footy, you know. Good luck to Richmond. They were too good on the day. Yeah, I think when that happened, I think Scotty Turner that day also ran through Dave Grenbold as well, and there was another one. But yeah, look, that's it. The scoreboard says Richmond were the best side that day. Having said that, they weren't the following week. I think Geelong beat them by that 90 yep. points, so that was a waste. But certainly on that day, the Richmond Tiger Army were up and about.
Well, a better moment for you in 1995. We mentioned off the top that you played for Victoria 9 times, and that was that amazing State of Origin game in 1995. All the emotion at the MCG when Ted Whitten and Ted Whitten Jr. did that emotional lap about a month or two before the great Ted Whitten passed away. What are your memories of that day?
It was an incredible day. We were never going to lose. Just South Australia was stiff that day because of just the emotion. And we'd come through. I'd been in the state system, about 6 years. So, and the passion that came through from Ted and the other guys like Graham Richmond and those types of blokes that just bled for Victoria. Just to be involved in that day was fantastic. I remember he was introduced. Danny Frawley was taking him around to each player in the rooms as we were warming up. And Gary, this is Gary O'Donnell. Oh, Gary Lyon, how are you, mate? Yeah, good luck today. because by that stage, his height had left him as well. But great game to be a part of. And geez. You'd love to have, it's never going to happen, but I think the interstate footy, if they're ever going to bring it back, it has to be mid-season. It has to be when players are zinging and you get some of the best standard games of balls going from one end of the ground to the other. And, just the top echelon of players playing in, one or two games is just something to behold. And just as a kid growing up and either coming home from school to watch a WA game at the Subiaco and Vic's going over there to play the Sandgropers, or a night game and they're playing South Australia, or you get to go to a game at the MCG as a kid and barrack for your heroes that are from your state. Probably a little bit that kids these days miss out on.
And now 12 months later, you played in another very memorable game for different reasons. It was out at Waverley against St Kilda. You're captain and the lights go out. You come back on the Tuesday night and complete the game. And there's a clip on YouTube, news story at the time where you spoke in the rooms after the game. You were filthy on the AFL that the fact that you had to come out, or all the players had to come out and play that game a couple of nights later after the lights went out.
Those 42 players got the league out of a hole tonight and helped them out. I'm hoping that the AFL will help those 42 players out in the next week or so.
In what sort of way would you expect them to help you out?
Now that we have done the work to get them out of the hole, I would expect some sort of remuneration arrangement that will help players out. I think it was the fast that a game can start with 21 players on each side and then you continue the game, same scores with different players. I think that's just, it's made it a joke.
It was just ridiculous. The game was made a mockery of that night, I thought. We were all full-time workers almost. The game hadn't gone full-time yet and we'd have to come back on the Tuesday night. Obviously, you couldn't have the same 21 players, I think it was, come back and play because some blokes pull up sore and aren't ready to play until a week later. And so Tuesday night, we're able to play new players. So James Hird, for example, didn't play on the Saturday because he didn't quite come up, but Tuesday was good enough, so he came back into the side. That is shambolic. Also, what I think it was about the 10-minute mark of the third quarter, so they just divided what time was left into two halves, and we played, kicked one end half the time. It was ridiculous. Guy actually rang it because I might have even been vice president of the Players Association. I rang Ian Collins, who was the footy.
Yep.
Controller at that point, was Stephen Hocking, I think.
That's right.
And he said, "Mate, we can't do this. Ridiculous. You got to reward us at the very least." So I think we all got an ex gratia payment of $500 each and play. And it was probably until something like that happens and there's no rules in place. Well, now there is. So if it happens before half time, two teams have 2 points each. And if it happens after half time, whoever's leading gets the 4 points. So if you've got a really important night game, get someone to pull the lights out and run away, and if you're up after half time, and you'll get the 4 points. But very interesting circumstances. It was like Lord of the Flies, if anyone's read the book. Yeah. It was just anarchy, people acting like just as if there's no law and order, ripping up seats, ripping out goalposts, lighting fires. There was no way known we could come back out of the race again and play the game that night. It was just an extraordinary experience, and it'll never happen again, hopefully.
Yep, it was a farce. Now, you mentioned before the end of 1998 when your time at Essendon came to an end. So you played 17 games that year. You played in the losing qualifying final to North Melbourne, and then it was a pretty ugly exit, wasn't it? I mean, it was like you were almost retired by the footy club. Would that be right?
Yeah. There was synergy in that. So if we remember my first game, didn't get on till half time. My last game in that final, I didn't get on till half time. It was incredible. Started the third quarter, and we played North Melbourne. It was actually the marshmallow game. So we've got us getting beaten, knocked out, my last game, and Sheeds walking along the boundary getting pelted with marshmallows by North Melbourne supporters. Yeah, look, everyone retires, every player, a lot of players have to get told. There's not many that go out on their own term. Look, there was a leak on the board. I'd had my exit meeting on the Monday, and Sheed, Matty Drain, the footy manager at that time, saying, "Gary, if your career is finished," I said, "Oh, what do you reckon? Do you really think so?" "Yeah, it's finished." And there, at that point, there was the veterans list rule where half your salary went into only counted on the list. Not that I was earning any big bucks either, but just it gave the club a sort of a supernumerary number on the end of the list. But that was, that's coming in. Maybe I can keep playing. Nah, you're gone. Okay. We'll think about it overnight, and we'll make some sort of announcement the next day. And then lo and behold, it was back page of the Herald Sun, O'Donnell sack. And that was a little bit disappointing. But that's footy as well. And it's water under the bridge now. Just things happen for a reason. And there it is. But it could have been a better set of circumstances if I come out and said, "Look, I'm starting to slow up. I've had my time. I'm moving on my own terms." But that's life.
We're talking to Bomber great Gary O'Donnell on This Is Your Sporting Life. Thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. After the break, Gary moves north to join Lethal's all-conquering Lions.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
It's been great to have your company here on This Is Your Sporting Life. Thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Today, our guest has been Essendon great Gary O'Donnell. Now, Gary, Lee Matthews, he was a huge fan of you as a player. At one stage, he said you're in the top five midfielders in the competition. Then you spent six seasons up north for three flags from four grand finals. It must have been an amazing time working with such a great coach and an amazing group of players.
It was incredible, and I never saw myself moving interstate, and it was the best thing I did, just to pack up, bring the family out of two young girls, 4 and 2. We packed up, moved to Brisbane, not knowing what was going to happen. It was the best thing, best bit of personal development I reckon you can have. Just see the AFL from an interstate club's perspective as well. And one thing, there's no regret, but I wouldn't have minded coming through as a player nowadays. And you get drafted by an interstate club, and you go to an interstate club, and you grow up a lot quicker, I reckon, and you become more independent quicker. So that would have been beneficial for me, I reckon. Having spent 4 years getting a game, it might have been, they might not have kept me on, but certainly it was the best thing we did. And when player of the century comes to you and says, Gary, I like the way you go about things, I'd like you to come up with me. Yeah, it was fantastic. And little did we know as well, Brisbane had finished last, and the year before in 98, and you had a young team that had just, what was it, about 2 or 3 years earlier, that had merged, or Fitzroy had merged with the Brisbane Bears. They got 8 players, I think it was about 2 left, but you had a group of players that were just, they were quite impressed by the fact that Lee Matthews, the great Lee Matthews, was coming to coach them as well. And really practical sort of person, no mucking around, says, what he says is gospel. He doesn't have to raise his voice too often as well. He's just got those beady eyes. Brisbane had just, a couple of champions on each line. In defence, mid-boards, they just had champions of the game that I'd love to be able to see them play, but the modern day Hawks, the modern day Tigers, just to see how they go, and the winner takes all. But it was a fabulous opportunity to go up there, and it was a fabulous 6 years that I spent.
Who would win?
It's an interesting one, because each of those sides have all got their own style. The Brisbane team beat the great Essendon team, but I think the Essendon team were just going off the boil as well, and had a few injuries in 2001. But the Brisbane team had a mean streak in them as well. I think that may well get them over the line. There was probably 7 or 8 players in the team that, real take no prisoner type attitude. Whereas, in the modern day now, the Richmond team is a really well-oiled machine. Each cog in it knows what each one's doing, and they work together really well. Probably the talent would be better in Brisbane. Probably Richmond play a better team style. Who knows? If they're coached in the same eras, they would play similar type footy. Yeah, hard to. I'll probably lean Brisbane though.
I thought you might say that. So great success, great success at Brisbane. Then you returned to Essendon at the end of 2004. And given your history with the club and the successful program you'd been involved in at Brisbane, a lot of people thought you were the logical successor at some stage to take over from Kevin Sheedy. Was that ever in the thoughts? Did you ever want to become a senior coach?
No, it wasn't in my thought process. Oh, I didn't think I'd ever become a senior coach. There's just a couple of things I don't do well enough that I need to have in the repertoire. Sorry, a senior coach has to have in their repertoire to be a successful senior coach. So I was happy with a role that I played in various assistant roles, various line roles, various development roles in over 18 years at 2 clubs. But you never had those top level aspirations. So maybe never had the go or the courage to do it either. Who knows? But that is now history. Come back to Essendon wasn't that good a period, and my time back at Brisbane the second time wasn't that good a period as well. So you learn a lot, both when the team's going real well and when a team's struggling. You get the best of both worlds, and you learn that the highest, there's what's the saying? The lows aren't ever too low and the highs aren't ever too high, something like that. Hopefully you get consistent, and you get a consistent approach with your players. But you learn a lot in both success and in despair.
You did get one crack at it, though, in the senior coach's box when Kevin Sheedy was in hospital, had to go on operation. And you're probably a bit of a trivia question, really, aren't you? Because you coached one game and you didn't experience the high of a win or the low of a loss.
No. It was probably how my playing career went. I was just that even sort of player. Not any flashy Brownlow votes, and not getting my bum kicked too often either. But we're 2 goals up against Carlton, and we were looking pretty dodgy down back, and I've moved Ricky Dyson to defence just to give us a little, you know, he's a good ball user, and just to give us, this was about, you know, halfway through the last quarter, just to give us a little bit of, a little bit more stability there when we had the ball. And unfortunately, he's gone on to Eddie Betts. Eddie Betts kicked the last two goals of the game and drew the game. So, interesting. Look, players were really gutted that day because I think the team had lost the previous 13 games. They hadn't had a win for 13 games, and to be two goals up and then a draw, it was, there was a lot of sadness in blokes' eyes that night. I could see it. But, that's the way it goes. That's footy. Got one crack and 50%. No one else will do it, I would have thought.
No, that is probably true. Well, Gary, it was an amazing career. 243 games, premiership, a best and fairest, club captain, Vic rep 9 times, Essendon Hall of Famer, and it's been fantastic to catch up today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the invite, and yeah, it's been fabulous to just get the opportunity to be involved in our great game. It's been splendid.
And thank you all for joining us as well. You've been listening to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Jump online to find tobinbrothers.com.au. We'll catch up next week to celebrate the life of another sporting icon.